Hey, Matt Rothschild here, host of the Wisconsin Forward podcast all across the Civic Media Radio Network and at civicmedia.us. For the next several episodes of the Wisconsin Forward podcast, I'm going to be interviewing Democratic candidates for governor. With me now is Brett Hulsey, who represented the state legislature from Middleton from 2011 to 2015, and before that served on the Dane County Board for 14 years. It's a chunk of time.
My debts paid to society, I thought.
So that's too many meetings for me, Brett. Welcome to the Wisconsin Forward podcast.
Great to be here.
Well, it's nice to see you. It's been a long time. You ran for governor in 2014 and lost in that primary to Mary Burke, though that whole thing didn't end too well. You didn't get a ton of votes then.
51,300, man, yeah. To be precise.
Well, it's not insignificant, but I think percentage-wise it was under 20, close to 17, if I'm correct.
I did spend $7,044.
Well, it was good dollar for vote percentage, that's for
My
sure.
My attorney says that's the best in U.S. history.
Yeah, it was probably.
But that's coming from an attorney. I haven't double-checked that.
So probably better than anyone else's, that's for sure. You're running again. Why?
I am running because of my children, my grandchildren. My granddaughter started school on the west side of Madison in my old neighborhood the 1st of September. And then all of the studies came out about how our kids are struggling in all of our schools because of the cuts put in place by Walker Tiffany. I don't know if you've ever been to Two Rivers, but I pronounce it Walker Tiffany because the cuts put in place to our, first of all, disrespect for our teachers and staff and public servants, the cuts to our schools and the cuts to basically the fabric of the Wisconsin idea were put in place by Walker Tiffany in 2010. They started with Act 10 attacking retirement for workers, health care, and worker representation. And I debated that for 62 hours in the assembly. So I want to make a better Wisconsin for my grandkids, my kids, my family, and the other 5.9 million people in Wisconsin.
You know, you talk about the disrespect to teachers. I remember during the recall of Scott Walker, that evening, the evening that Walker won the recall, not by a lot, but he won it. And there was a teacher who was interviewed here at the Concourse Hotel just down the street. And she said, I don't know why they hate us so much.
Yeah.
Why do they hate teachers so much? Why do they hate public sector workers so much? And that was Scott Walker's whole deal. I mean, he did divide and conquer.
Well, and I think he had issues with teachers at Marquette that perhaps thought he was not the best student that he could be. But my mother was a teacher, public school teacher in Oklahoma for over 40 years. She was a gay school teacher, which was very difficult. But she taught at an international baccalaureate high school, which is kind of advanced placement on steroids. I tried to follow in her footsteps. I taught at a school called Cross Academy down there. And my first year, I taught physics, biology, earth science, physical science, yearbook, and journalism, and coached soccer. I created a triathlon team for kids. So I first realized, and I have a master's in science education. So I tried to be a teacher down there, but I survived that first year, and then they gave me chemistry and biology and journalism. I taught journalism too, and computers. So so the first thing we need to do is respect teachers, because I don't know about you, but everything I've learned came from, you know, teachers that we've had.
And what do we do about restoring funding to public education?
Well, I sent you the check, I think, for a $2.1 billion. That is all the money that Walker Tiffany took away from our schools and our workers. And I was just at an event up in the Fox Valley, and I had a chance to update that for inflation. So I handed out, I think, about 40,000 of those checks the last time. It's made out to the people of Wisconsin, the teachers and students. So adjusted for inflation, that'd be $3 billion, We have a $4.6 billion surplus. And after we're done here, I'm going to go up to the legislature and talk to, I've been trying to get in to see Robin Voss and Greta Neubauer. She and I both went to Middlebury College in Vermont, and see if we can get both sides of the aisle to pay back what they took from us. I go all over the state, and people tell me, I've been to about 20 counties in the last 4 weeks in my 95 Cutlass Supreme, which is an upgrade from the 87 Cabriolet last time. It is American made, so I'm going for that UAW vote. And people come up to me on the street all the time saying they have that check on their on their refrigerator, and I want to deliver on my promise.
I'm not sure Robin Voss is going to open his door to you today.
When I was in the legislature, he invited everyone to go have beer with him after work on Fridays. I was the only Democrat that showed up. And while, you know, he and I, you know, he shut our debate down after 62 hours at 6 o'clock in the morning, you know, because probably he couldn't stand hearing me anymore telling him if he was a true conservative and a true Republican like Teddy Roosevelt, he wouldn't be attacking workers like this. But I at least showed up. And of course, my Democratic colleagues thought I was selling out. But one of the things Fred Risser points out in his book, and everybody should read his book, by the way, is that government works better when we all work together and can sit down and work stuff out.
What about funding for the UW system? That's another big issue.
Huge issue. I don't have that check right in front of me, but I know I've got a big number for them. One of the problems with UW, and I have a sailboat down at the Union, so I have a front row seat. And when I have homeless people in my house. One of my crew chief, whose wife just got out of the hospital with back surgery, needed to be in shelter, so he and she were sleeping in my bed this fall. I was sleeping on my sailboat down at the Union in the mooring field where I'm supposed to be. But I wake up, I used to work on farms. I wake up every morning at 5 o'clock. And also I'm old, so I don't need sleep anymore. And I would pan the front of the Union and look at all of the lights that were turned on. Now, I know UW, lots of researchers there say they care about climate change, but the brightest lights there, I'm an energy consultant, been doing it since 1978, and my parents told us to turn the lights off. I don't know about your parents, but the UW can save millions and millions of dollars by optimizing their own operation to stop wasteful spending like this, all the way from the UW Alumni Center, you know, to all the way to Limnology. So I will get them more money, but I will also, my goal of my positive energy plan is to make every government building in the state of Wisconsin, all the way state down to schools, net zero by 2030. And I have a plan to do that.
You mentioned you had homeless people in your house. How often do you have homeless people sleeping over?
Right now, well, the two people who, I have a rental property on Ridgeway, which is by one of the closest houses to the flight path of the F-35 fighters, by the way. We could talk about that later. But upstairs, the two upstairs people, you'll see in that press release I sent you, they were living in their car before they moved in with me. In my house, the city of Madison says I can house a maximum of 5 people. I have one veteran who has PTSD, and she's on disability there. So I can have 4 homeless people in my house. That's my capacity. I would argue with the city of Madison that with winter coming, we need to start with homeless vets. And I would say to people out there, I can get you a screened homeless veteran from the VA, and they have an allowance of $700 a month to pay. So if anybody has a spare bedroom, there's about 100 unhoused people in Wisconsin, about 18 of them are veterans. So these veterans are screened, and they also get support services. So no American veteran, well, first of all, nobody should be homeless in America, the richest country in the history of the world. So,
you know, you've been highlighting this issue of homelessness. You kicked off your campaign in front of an organization that helps people who are
the Beacon. House. They do a great job. And by the way, they are making no, they're not involved in my campaign and can make no endorsements because they're a 501c3.
Sure. But that was just a way for you, I imagine, to draw attention to what you think is a really important issue. Otherwise, you would have kicked your campaign off at a hotel.
Right. Or in front of the Capitol. The Journal Sentinel said I did it in front of the Capitol, but they only had 9 errors in their story. So, but yeah, I mean, after there have been points in my life where I have been homeless. When I was unfortunately getting divorced from my ex-wife, she poor woman put up with me for 20 years. That's, you know, her debt was paid to society. But I gave her and my family my entire state representative salary. And I was living on my per diem, which was between, as I recall, $400 or $500 a month. So I was living in a van down by the river, and I deserved it, as Chris Farley said. But then I got the sailboat, and that's a lot, you know, better place to live down at the Memorial Union than a van down by the river. But
well, how do we make how do we solve the problem of homelessness? Once you have something I saw where you said, don't give them money, but do other things for people who are homeless.
Yeah. In fact, walking down here, I saw two gentlemen, Dude and Liam. So what I do is I hire homeless people. First of all, I'm a general contractor and carpenter, and I have a hard time finding workers, you know, people to do my, I do small projects. I'm working on an 1870 restoration right now on Henry Doan. It's the first African-American home owned in Madison. First of all, I give them a job. I start them at $15 an hour. If they show up to work and are reliable, I'll bump that to $20 an hour. Then my other business model is I give them home. I give them roof over their head, especially with winter coming. And then I'm trying to get them into apprentice programs where an apprentice, my Dennis, the guy who lives upstairs, he's on the video that I sent you, has IT skills. So he can get in, there's a union he can get, apprentice programs will pay them $30,000 to $40,000 a year. And the idea is launching them on a trajectory of having a job, having a place over their head. I was at a ice boat meeting last night. I got the spare food. You know, I take that. I feed folks. And back to Maslow's pyramid, everybody in society can't move up the pyramid till they have food, clothing, and shelter.
Mm-hmm. So that was from an individual level, what you're doing. From a systemic level, or if you know, from a governmental level, if you're governor, how do you solve the problem of homelessness?
In Madison, we could solve it tomorrow. We have a lot of vacant government buildings downtown. Jeff 2 is an example. These are slated to be torn down. My goal is to get all the homeless people off the street by the first day of winter. I've got about a month to do that. But I left a note for Governor Evers. If we can open up the first floor of Jeff 2, I worked with FEMA after the 93 floods and Katrina. That's back, by the way, when we had a FEMA. I worked with President Clinton and Vice President Gore and James Lee Witt to move 12,000 homes and businesses out of floodplains after the 93 floods. That flood killed about 80 people, cost $18 billion. But what we do after a natural disaster like that is we move people into a gym. And we can put, you know, basically you have a sleeping bag, a cot, and so I'm trying to get the Y to open their Eastside gym to that. And I would put a plea out, if anyone down there has a vacant space, we especially need a homeless center at the base of State Street, close to Library Mall, because that's a mile and a half walk to the Beacon. And there's a collection of people down there that need a place that to get warm, have coffee, eat, go to the bathroom. I mean, it's as being homeless, the UW shuts their bathrooms down. They have a shower down there by Hoofers that people could use to shower. And so provide those basic services. If the city will allow us, we'd like to, you know, use it as an overnight shelter. A lot of people like being in that, you know, everybody wants to be on State Street. But so that's just, and what my business model is, I want to make this so it's sustainable. As we've seen with the cuts to SNAP and the cuts to the county budget, government is slow, inefficient, and unreliable right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm, as a small business person, I want to be fast, efficient, and trustworthy.
Sticking with the general housing subject, I mean, rent is impossibly high right now. Mortgage is high. It's almost impossible for a young person to even contemplate, you know, buying a house because it costs so much. If you're a governor, what do you do about the housing crisis here?
Well, what I have done is I bought a 9 years ago, I think, I bought Ray Peterson. You remember, he was the infamous landlord who had 1.2 million in code violations. I bought the last house from him as an 1849 house on Milwaukee Street. And I fixed that up. It took me 3 years to get it up to code, but I grew up working on farms. I'm a contractor, carpenter. And I kept the, there was a blind lady and her caregiver in the first place. I had to increase her rent a little bit, but I provided, and then I did Section 8 affordable housing upstairs. If I had had that place now, I could put five homeless veterans in there upstairs. It was a four bedroom. I could get $700 a month from them. So I would be making, as a landlord, $3,500 a month, as opposed to the $2,400 I was making just renting at fair market value. So again, I'm talking to landlords out there. Guys, we have a way we can make more money and have a sustainable program that's, you know, it's hard when they shut the government down, but, you know, when I'm a governor, of course, that's not going to happen in Wisconsin.
Well, let's talk about how you react to, or what's your reaction to what Trump is doing to this country, first of all?
I don't know if anybody's been watching the Revolutionary War special, Ken Burns, on PBS. If you haven't, I think each one of us should. If you read the Declaration of Independence written by Thomas Jefferson, who's one of my heroes, I respect everything he did other than some of his slave dating, and you'd have no worry about me doing that. But I don't own slaves, so that's a... But if you read the Declaration of Independence, the long train of abuses, and I've had a team of lawyers looking at that, very closely follows what King Trump is doing to America. And it's from, the ICE raids, the illegal ICE raids. And by the way, I am going to send a letter to Kristi Noem warning them that in a state like Wisconsin that has the Castle Doctrine or a Defend Your Ground Doctrines, those agents who are unidentified can be shot by the landowner with impunity. So it's those are a lot of states if you look around. So again, we don't want, I believe, you know, I'm a Christian. I believe in thou shalt not kill, but we want to protect those ICE agents, and they should not be doing what they're doing in states. I think there's 40 of them with the Castle Doctrine.
So just to be clear, you're not encouraging homeowners to shoot an ICE agent if they're coming down their driveway?
Absolutely not. But I'm warning ICE agents that in these states they could, and escape with impunity, especially if they're not identifying themselves, which they aren't. They have no marking identification, and they have no warrants. So these are illegal search and seizures, going back to the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. This is what the British were doing in America, and one of the reasons we swore off our allegiance to King George. And I think, according to the polls, people are swearing off their allegiance to King Donald as well.
So what should the governor of Wisconsin do if when ICE is operating, you know, in Milwaukee or wherever it is?
If they are operating illegally, and breaking any Wisconsin laws, they will be charged as such. And I believe there's a handful, a host of laws they're breaking, including illegal search and seizure. They don't have valid warrants. And so we will ask Wisconsin law enforcement officials to enforce our laws, which we can in Wisconsin, and have them charged and sent to prison if need be.
What about the Wisconsin National Guard? I mean, the governor is responsible for the National Guard, but here you have Trump going over the heads of the governors, grabbing, you know, nationalizing the National Guard, putting them in the streets, not only of the state where they are, or shipping them off to Portland, Oregon. You know, how should the governor of Wisconsin deal with that?
The governor is the commander-in-chief of the National Guard. My understanding of the federal law is President Trump can only take charge of those guards in a national emergency. Unfortunately, he is the one who is creating the national emergency. I was just looking at the murder rates. The murder rates in American cities are some of the lowest they've been in history. The last spike in murder rates, by the way, was during Trump's first administration. I don't think he wants to point that out. But there is no national emergency. There are challenges in all urban cities. But one of my opponents, Executive Crowley, pointed out the other day that murder rates are way down in Milwaukee. I think we want to continue focusing on investing in Milwaukee, Madison, our big cities. I know murder rates are down here in Madison as well. So that's not like there isn't crime. But I was just running the numbers yesterday on the SNAP soda sugar ban. Obesity kills 16 times more people in America than murders do. So as governor, I need to focus on things that are hurting the most people.
Yeah, and I'm sure cigarettes do a lot, too.
They only kill 1,000 people a day, and they killed my father, my grandfather, and my sister of pancreatic cancer at 52. And one of the things I want to do is internalize the full cost of cigarettes, which I think when I ran the numbers was about $3 billion, and make a pack of cigarettes pay its own way. And by the way, I have a solution to that. I grew up working on our farm, and you know, I started chewing tobacco when I was 14 years old. That's what you did when you're a farmer in Oklahoma. But I take these nicotine patches, and when the homeless people or anybody ask me for a cigarette, I hand them a patch.
Oh, there you go.
Because not only does it give you the nicotine without the deadly tar, it's not going to rot your lungs, your teeth, your mouth. And I've lost 35 pounds in 3 months, you know, because it is a stimulant.
Yeah, I mean, people don't realize that cigarettes kill about 350,000 Americans every year.
Right.
Car crashes kill about 40,000. Alcohol kills about 100,000.
Right.
That's a lot.
Yeah, and that's 1,000 people a day. And that's secondhand smoke is another 1,000 people a week. That's 50,000 people, which is about the number of people that died in the Vietnam War. Mm.
You were making a comparison to those who are murdered. I'm wondering what your criminal justice policy would be.
I believe we need to fairly enforce the laws that we have. And one of the things working with homeless people is I see the laws are unfairly enforced upon the people in the lowest economic part of it. I think the number is if you're homeless, you're 7 times more likely to be arrested. If you're African-American, maybe, I think African-America is 7 times, homeless is 11 times. And they're often defended by overworked and underpaid public defenders. So I believe our criminal justice system needs to catch real criminals and provide them justice. An example of that, I had to evict a gentleman from my rental unit who was threatened me with a sword. Mm. He was dealing drugs, I believe, and he was convicted of beating his abusing his girlfriend and another woman. I started the criminal eviction last November. It took me until August 5th to get him out of my rental property. So I support tenants' rights. I've been a tenant. I've been a landlord. We need laws that allow us to get these criminals out of He got probation and parole. I understand he didn't show up for his sentencing. He is now wandering the street someplace. People like him need to be in jail. By the way, his sword was about as long as my 28-ounce hammer when he threatened me. And, you know, I think he would have lost that fight. But, you know, not everybody, these are the kind of people that need to be in jail. We have a lot of people in jail right now with drug offenses, nonviolent offenses, and maybe didn't get the best representation. So I want to look at each one of those cases very carefully on probation and parole and see, can I get them out on the street? Can I give them a job? Can I put them to work? A lot of them are illiterate. We need education programs. A lot of them have disabilities. A lot of them have mental health issues. You know, we need to cause the root cure of crime. And I worked on that with Kathleen Falk and others on the county board. I want to do that as governor as well.
And what about health care in general? What's the solution to the health care issue?
So right now? My dad was a family physician. He considered himself a country doctor. It was in Norman, Oklahoma. When we moved there, there were 30,000 people there. And he provided health care following the Hippocratic Oath. Which is, first of all, you do no harm. And second of all, you help everyone whether they can pay or not. We had one of his clients who paid us with a mule. And being the oldest son, it was my job to ride and break the mule. So it took me an hour to get saddle on him. And the first thing the mule did was head right for the lowest branch to get me off. This mule had, in its defense, had been abused. It was blind in one eye. Somebody hit it with a 2x4. So it had a rough baby mulehood. So, but I did the old, I don't know if you remember the Tom Mix thing where you go down on the saddle, and he didn't get me on the first time, but then he headed for the blackberry bramble. And that's at the point that I decided to roll off because I didn't want to be rolled in blackberry. And it took me 2 weeks to catch that mule and get the saddle off of him. And then he called up the client that owed him and said, you know, you can come get your mule. Our debt is paid. So, but the bigger point is we have, again, the most expensive healthcare system in the world, roughly twice as much as Canada, last I looked. And we have the sickest people in the industrialized world. We literally rate last, I think 32nd or 33rd in all. I wouldn't call them civilized, but I'm not sure we're civilized countries. So we have a great Badger Care program here. I think we can. I'm fortunate enough to be on Medicare. I'm 66 years old. But we need to close that gap between Badger Care and Medicare. When I was running my business, the Affordable Care Act made it so I could stay in business. I know Ron Johnson doesn't believe in it, but, you know, he made his money the old-fashioned way. He married it.
He married into it.
Yeah, so which is nice work if you can get it, but I still haven't found my sugar mama yet. But I started my business. I got laid off at the Sierra Club after 18 years in the basement with $100 and a TV tray and a laptop, which I just celebrated 20 years. But the thing that helped me get that long as a small business person, and 80% of the jobs in America and Wisconsin are small business people, was the Affordable Care Act. Healthcare was killing me. And I don't think we've done a good job of saying, before Affordable Care Act went in pass, shopping for healthcare was the Wild West. You get all these things and it was apples and oranges. With the Affordable Care Act, it allows you to compare, you know, three plans, get the best one, and it cut my funding for my family significantly. I don't have the exact numbers. I can look them up.
No, that's right. But it also did, if you have pre-existing conditions like I do, you were
right,
just out of luck, as they say.
Right. And yeah, it covered your kids up to 26.
Right.
So my daughter just turned 27. She's acting in her first play in New York. And
congratulations.
So it's an in-person play. She was Puck in Midsummer Night's Dream, but that was online. So my son's 31. He has a good job with health insurance. But we need to cover those kids right out of college. And like you said, just because you have diabetes, you know, I probably have more mental health issues than I could list here, you know, but it's like,
everyone should be covered. That's
right.
Amazing.
And that's the fundamental goal, is everyone can see the appropriate healthcare professional for the problem they have, get medicine they can afford and the treatment they can afford without going bankrupt. And healthcare is one of the largest sources of bankruptcy in America. We can do that. We are the wealthiest nation in the history of the world. And all we have to do is look to Canada, Costa Rica, even Cuba has better systems. So my plan would be to have a Wisconsin expand Badger Care to, you know, we can do both the, we can raise the income. There's actually Scott Walker, some of the stuff I sent you, tried to kick Badger people off of Badger Care, kids. We stopped him from doing that because it was illegal. But we can expand Badger Care. That's a good starting point. Then on medicine, there's a lot of free medicine programs out there that people don't know about that drug companies have. We need to have that organized so that people can get the low-cost free medicine if they can. My dad actually published a book on it. Back in the days, they published books. And so we can provide medicine. Then with all these closing rural hospitals, my work for Wisconsin plan will allow us to put a physician's assistant and LPNs in those. They can do 80% of the healthcare providing that a doctor can, including LPNs can prescribe medicine and deal with most of our problems. Then they have a physician they can telehelp with to, and you know, we can get people to Madison or where Marshfield, Green Bay, wherever they need the care. So we can do that much more cost effectively. And if those LPNs and PAs stay in Wisconsin for 5 years, I'll pay for $40,000, about 2 years of their education. And that goes for everybody. If you serve in an underserved area with a critical profession, I will forgive basically 2 years of your college or your tech training. A lot of people can be doing this with tech training, which is much more cost effective than higher ed.
You mentioned you had mental health issues. Do you want to talk about that?
Absolutely.
What are you dealing with?
My father would come home drunk. I mean, he took care of half of the police force in Norman, Oklahoma. So when they caught me rat racing, you know, the call would go home before I got home. So I was prepared to take my licks, you know, when I got home. And he didn't spare the belt, let's say. But I was dealing with an abusive alcoholic. One of his fun things to do at this pool was to hold me and my brother underwater and see which one of us could last the longest. But when I got my Naval Academy appointment, I wanted to be either a Navy SEAL, aircraft fighter pilot, or a Marine Corps recon leader, or all the above. So I can swim underneath the pool and back many times. He practiced the Friedrich Nietzsche school of parenting. That's which does not destroy us, makes us strong. And, I didn't appreciate that. He used to wrestle us on the ground, hold us down in choke holes and see if we could get out of it. And I finally had to break three of his ribs to tell him not to teach him not to do that, because he taught me you don't have to whip every bully. You just got to whip the biggest one. And after that, he quit beating on me and my mom and my brother the way he was. So it was not an easy upbringing.
Right.
But he also was chairman of the National Wildlife Federation, Outdoor Life Conservationist of the Year. He was, you know, the living embodiment of Aldo Leopold in Oklahoma. And he set me on a course. My goal in life was to be an environmental superhero. And I'm still working on that. But it's like I have to decide between the cape and the no cape, though. He was a good man and a mean drunk. So I've gone to a lot of Al-Anon meetings. I've gotten, you know, hours of when he disowned and disinherited me at his memorial service. Oof. Because he would regularly call up and ask me why I wasn't in the U.S. Senate. And I tried to explain to him that Herb Cole was in the U.S. Senate, and he had a little more money than I did. But so now I'm perhaps fulfilling his dream for me. But, you know, it's been a bit of a rough road. But now that I'm, you know, on the campaign trail, I'm happy as a clam. So,
well, let's talk about that a little more. I mean, almost all the other candidates have a lot more money than you do. They're not Herb Cole, but
no.
They're able to access a lot of money.
Right.
And they got bigger staffs and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to be considered a long shot. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder what's in it for you, or is it a lark, or you're trying to raise issues that no one's going to raise? You know, what's driving you?
So first of all, back to why I'm doing it for my kids, for my grandkids. I would hand you a business card, but I'm out of them. But what it says is, how can I help you? My plan is to have my last time I hired homeless people to work on my campaign, one of whom misled me and was on papers. The Democratic Party challenged me going into the count, and I had eight signatures to spare.
They wanted to knock you out?
They wanted to knock me out. They wanted to give Mary Burke a free run. And I
don't believe in free runs myself.
Well, I believe in democracy, Matt. I don't know about you, but yeah, the Democratic Party wouldn't let me speak at the convention. I did make up some Chinese party hats because I don't know if you know, but I do sew as well. So I make my own camping equipment. But and my mom taught me to sew. My grandma actually taught me to sew on a treadle sewing machine. But I ran against Mary Burke. I went to hear her speak. And that's the thing that convinced me I'd had to run then, because she needed spring training. As do the Badgers and the Brewers,
that's one reason primaries are important. Give
right.
people at bats, get you know, give them the experience they need. I'm always for
right.
a contested primary for that reason and for democracy reason. Give people choices.
The strongest steel is forged in the hottest fire. And I just met Missy at the homeless conference. She's a formidable. I've only been in public service. I was an energy conservation advocate in the Carter administration in 1978 in Alaska. I've only been at this for 45 plus years. And I, as Ronald Reagan said, will not make to paraphrase him, I will not make my opponent's youth and a lack of knowledge an issue in this campaign. But on any issue, I probably have experience in it, and if I don't, I do my homework. So, but let's get down to numbers, and I'll give you my campaign plan, Matt, for you. So in 2014, I got 51,300 votes. And the question is, how many votes will I get in 2026? I taught everything from sixth grade math to college physics, and I helped run President Clinton's and Vice President Gore presidential campaign in the war room with James Carville. So it's not my first rodeo. So the question is question mark. So I spent, according to data, $7,044 when I ran before. Again, I don't believe in wasting people's money. I have the St. Vinny's tag on my shirt here, just so you know that I'm thrifty. Again, I was an Eagle Scout. I'm not cheap. I'm thrifty. So the question is, you know, how much am I going to spend this time? And I'm willing to spend, you know, three times that. Let's spend $21,000. I've got that in the bank and ready to go. So you do the math, and I can't do all this in my head anymore. I apologize. So 51.
It's going to be about 150,000.
300 equals, yeah, rough numbers. Times 21. Yep. So let's just go 150,000. So, and it appears to me that because of the August 11th primary, there's going to be about four. And again, the Republicans set the August 11th primary then, and I voted against it, to be when people are on vacation and students are out of school. They want to reduce democracy. So 400,000 divided, and there's still seven candidates. I know it's early in the day. It's about 11 o'clock. We seem to get a new one.
There may be more.
There may be more, but the average candidate is going to get 55,000. You know, and but again, my opponents are smarter than the average bear, but they all can't get more than that. So, and again, I'm the only one who's really run a contested. I went to all counties in Wisconsin on my 87 Cabriolet. So let's say I get 150,000 at 21,000 votes. But the secret weapon is my car last time was the Volkswagen Cabriolet. And I can show you a picture of that. I drove that all over the state. I bought it with my campaign money. I said I would use it in parades. And, you know, I'll use it in any parade they don't kick me out of. And I sold that for $2,500 to Buzz Nordeen. He used to be the president of First Federal Bank right downstairs. And I bought the new 95 Cutlass Supreme for $2,800 off Marketplace. Florida car, no rust. And I will send you a picture of it. But, you know, and of course, the American-made Cutlass Supreme is a ploy to get the UAW vote, you know, and the union vote. So that car is roughly twice the value of the original car. So if I multiply that 150,000, which is probably enough to win a seven-way primary anyway, I get 300,000 votes. But remember last time I won Franklin, Wisconsin. I was raised a Republican. My first campaign was Barry Goldwater when I was five. I shook Richard Nixon's hand in 1968. My dad was a big Republican in Oklahoma. And then Ronald Reagan turned against conservation, hunting and fishing, and the environment, and tried to take the conserve out of conservative. That's how I became a Democrat.
I was just going to ask.
So, and my grandmother, I carry a coin in my pocket of Franklin Roosevelt. She had a picture of him up on the wall. We are the people who stayed in Oklahoma. The quitters went to California, and Will Rogers said they increased the IQ of both places. But here's Teddy Roosevelt, one of my favorite presidents, and there's Franklin Roosevelt.
Nice.
Who I found out last night. I was at my ice boat meeting. He used to be a big ice boater on the Hudson back when they had ice there. I did not know that.
That's neat.
But,
hey, Brett, we're just about out of time. I want to ask you to tell any listener, if they want to support your campaign, how they can do that.
All they need to remember is don't fret, voteforbrett.org. And I, like I said, I'm going to fund this myself. I helped manage President Clinton's campaign. I don't know anybody who runs. I've beaten popular Republican incumbents in rural districts with women in Oklahoma. I don't know anybody that runs a better campaign than me. But what I want is people's help. If you want to work with me to build a better Wisconsin, you can make your own yard sign. I'm not going to kill any more trees to save the environment than I have to. I got yard signs in Appleton and Racine. And Kenosha. So just make your own yard sign, put it in your window, and you can go to my website, voteforbrett.org, and you know, we're going to be asking people for $20. I'm not going to limit my campaign because I'm going to give excess money I have to charity, but I believe we can work together, Democrats, Republicans, and Independents, to build a better Wisconsin for my grandkids and your kids, and hopefully you've got grandkids coming. So I only have two that I know. So, but just remember, don't fret, vote for Brett.
Well, I appreciate you giving us this time on the Wisconsin Forward podcast. It's been nice getting back in touch with you. It's been a while.
And thanks for your great work at the Progressive, and we want to make Wisconsin a progressive state again. So.
Yeah, we sure do. Good luck. Well, that's going to have to be it for this episode of the Wisconsin Forward podcast on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Matt Rothschild. I want to thank you for listening. I also want to thank my engineer and producer, Dom Lee, who's always great to work with. And I want to thank Sage Weil of Civic Media for giving me this platform. I'll be back in just a day or two with another Democratic candidate for governor, so stay tuned for that.